Friday to everybody. It's Bob McCown. It's John Shannon.
Hello, Robert.
Hello, John. With you on the program.
You always have to have a greeting. You have to say hello.
Greetings, John. I did say greetings.
Yes, I know, but it was a little prickly.
Well, it wasn't to you specifically, and I know that's what you love. You want me to pick you out of the crowd, as it were.
Well, speaking of crowds, how about tomorrow night? We finally get a crowd in Montreal.
Well, it won't be a crowd. It'll be a gathering. 2,500 tickets are being sold for the game at Centre-Belle. And
or Bell Center.
Yeah. My friend George Gillette insisted on calling it Centre-Belle.
Well, last I checked, he doesn't own the team anymore.
Well, I know he doesn't, but he's still my friend. And every time we talk, he says,
how come we don't have him on the show?
Well, we could. Anytime. Okay. You know what tickets are going for? Like the worst seat in the house. The worst seat in the house is over $1,000 per ticket. So if you want a pair.
In the secondary market.
I grant you that.
Okay.
Of course, that's not the price on the ticket. But then again.
Jeff Molson's going to be kicking himself.
That's well, rather astounding.
Yeah.
You often wonder why teams don't put a price on the ticket, then buy them all themselves, and then sell them all in the secondary market.
Bob, you make it sound like that's never happened.
Well, I mean, buy all the tickets that way.
You make it sound like it's never happened.
You want to spill the beans to the audience?
No, I can't, but I tell you what, there would be evidence.
Stanley Cup playoffs march on. It's not the NHL playoffs, right, John? Stanley Cup
playoffs? It's the Stanley Cup playoffs. Please, Robert.
PJ Stock of RDS, Brian Lawton of the NHL Network. Join us after these messages. It is a Friday. Thank the baby Jesus. It's McCown. It's Shannon. And if you're listening to this on radio or on the podcast, you can't see this, which is just as well. Brian Lawton is with us from the NHL Network. He has donned a pair of sunglasses in a bleak and oft repeated effort to impersonate me.
It's the finest form of flattery.
You're not the first to pull this stunt. You understand that, Lawton, right?
I brought props today. You guys should know. Hold on.
Oh God, he's got more. He's gotten out of his chair
bomb.
Now. What now?
Now I'm gonna do my next impersonation.
Oh, okay.
There's Brian. Now he's got the right, Brian Burke going.
Wow. By the way, how did that work out for him?
It worked out pretty well in the end, I think, as he said. Pittsburgh, even though they didn't win, but he's loving his new job. That's for sure.
I was joking with some friends. I said, you know, they lost in game six to the Islanders. And at that point, if they had won game six, it would have been Berkey's team. By losing game six, it's Hexie's team. So
there's some truth.
And it might
in that.
Be Jimmy Rutherford's by the end of the week. You never know.
Oh, hey, Jimmy Rutherford. Ooh. Jimmy Rutherford's got an agent now into the mix. Trying to have someone. Holy smokes! It's an interesting time to start putting your toe back into the water.
All right, well, you two guys, shut up for a second. I mean, we have another guest and it hasn't even been introduced yet.
Oh, yeah. I can do his impersonation too.
Although he's grossly underdressed, PJ Stock of RDS joins us.
That's on, guys. It's a big thing. This is a, you know, we're almost out of this thing. I've decided to start wearing pants. So from the last one that I've done with you guys, I don't know if I told you, but I had no pants on. So
that's more information than we require.
Sorry, guys.
It means you have to work at least another day because the Montreal Canadiens got a quick one in overtime last night and extended this thing after essentially falling apart in the second half of the game. They got a quick 3-0 lead and then blew it, but managed to survive. And fans in the building for the first time anywhere in Canada in, 14, 15 months, huh?
Mm-hmm.
2,500. And I don't know how, you know, it's a building that sits over 21,000. I'm not sure how the math is coming up, but I don't know how they're going to sit them either. And it's going to be interesting to see. I'm excited for the fans to be back. It's just so small, the amount. And I'm kind of you know, the Habs had to win. I had my Saturday night off. Everything was great. And now I have to go in and watch a game. But it's great. Bell Center, 2500, game six, Saturday night.
2500. There used to be 2500 at Saturday morning skates.
Yeah. Yeah. Just well, in time to eliminate the curfews in Montreal as well. You know, we just, our curfew's gone tonight. So you can go on terraces and restaurants tonight. So it's a start. Baby steps in the right direction.
Well, I mentioned to Shannon in the opening that the worst seat available in Centre-Belle is going for over $1,000 a ticket right now. Now, Shannon is a cheap ass, as we all know, and said he wouldn't pay.
Not a chance.
Would either of you two dum-dums?
I would not pay that, no. I've had a couple chances. My son's gone to a couple games here for the Wild. Seats were very reasonable.
Yeah, this is secondary market, Brian. This is secondary market, so.
Yeah, yeah, we tend to go right to the source, so you don't end up paying those kinds of prices. But I like it. It's a little bit like, you know, some, I've been to the Ryder Cup and all these big time golf events. I'd rather watch it on TV.
Right.
Hockey to me and our jobs is a little bit like that, to be honest with you.
We're the wrong group to be asking to, because we've had the luxury of being to so many games. You know, we were hardcore fans.
When have you become so rational? What is this? When is PJ Stock going to show up?
I'm just waiting. This is our intro. Brian and I sat around while you guys were doing your intro. Now we're just warming up. Props are coming out. I have pants on. Just, we're getting warmed up. Don't worry. We're getting warmed up. Letting Bobcat set the tone.
Well, you know, I mean, look, at there are season ticket holders that hold most of the tickets in every NHL arena. And they pay a lot of money, thousands, tens of thousands of dollars a year. And they have tickets for every game. So clearly they don't think that watching the game on television is better than watching the game in the arena. Now, I'm with you guys. I'd much rather sit in front of my television set and be comfortable and watch the game. To go every once in a while is nice, but you don't get to focus. You don't, you're oft distracted if you're sitting in the seats. In the press box is one thing, but in the seats, you know, you're surrounded by idiots who want to talk and you can't really concentrate on the game. How we got on this subject, I have no idea, but I'm going to get off it.
Okay.
Is there any reason to believe, Lawton, to you first, that Montreal can pull a rabbit out of their hat and win this thing?
Yeah, there's one reason. I'm not that optimistic for them, even watching the big, very quickly overtime win last night. I just thought that Toronto was the better team. But the one reason for me is clearly Carey Price.
Yep.
Can he come out and just absolutely put on a performance for the ages? And he'll have to do it a couple of times to win this series, obviously. But that's the one reason I would have to believe. Other than that, I haven't seen anything that convinces me. You know, Toronto gave away the first game, won the next three, really should have won last night. When you come back the way they did in the third period, it's unusual not to. So stranger things have happened, but Carey Price would be the one reason to hold out hope for the Montreal Canadiens.
Well, under normal circumstances, go ahead. I'm sorry, PJ. Go ahead.
I think Carey's been brilliant in every game. Like, yeah. During the regular season, I think he's had his flaws, but, you know, he's been unbelievable in these playoffs. He's been spectacular, and they just get, and the goals, and I thought Jack Campbell has actually been almost even par or better at some points, and yet last night they finally got to him, but they were ugly goals. They were just, you know, besides the Armia first one, which kind of is a reactionary broken play in zone, but besides that, you know, splashing around his crease, they got a couple through him. He's been just as good. So but that, if I look at the team, Brian, that's the only thing I can think of. I can't really think of anything else, because Toronto's matched them. And I thought the physicality was going to be one thing after game one. I think if anything, Toronto took the advantage in the next few games of their physicality. Last night, I guess, you know, everyone's excited because Perry threw a hit that started on the first goal that led to the Armia one. And then it kind of snowballed out of that. But it's just one of those games. They were up 3-1 thinking it was going to be too easy. And it's hard to actually put your foot back on the gas pedal. They were able to do it. And like you said, they should have won that game. They could have got 5 or 10 in that third period. But Carey Carey was amazing. Just so fun to watch.
I think I don't know what else to say about this.
Well, let me ask PJ because I'll ask Brian because he's a goal scorer.
Whoa, I got my box. Hold on. I have all five of mine right here, bud.
All five. Thank you.
The playoff ones are in another poll.
So at what point does when you're playing a game, as the game's going on and a goaltender is doing what Carey Price did or does, does he get in your head and how does it affect you the way you play the puck around the net?
It can force you to hurry things up a little bit and to eventually, if it really gets you off your game plan, you start doing things that I consider useless. And we've seen some coaches come into the league in the last few years and play this way. We just throw the puck on the net. Kind of like Montreal does, quite frankly. They don't have a lot of zone time. They throw a lot of pucks on that. It doesn't result in a lot of offense. I've been in some of these games when the other goalie is playing incredible, like Carey Price's. And it's just something that when you're going through it, until you get off a rhythm, you don't know it. You're just trying to be focused. You're trying to do what you know what to do. You're grinding away. And it can sneak up on you at the end of the day. Because one thing about playing hockey that we never really talk about is that I love more people the better. I only had a couple hat tricks in the NHL. They were both in Chicago Stadium. Not a coincidence. I love the energy of that, even as a visitor. But the reality is when you're playing hockey, a lot of that stuff gets blocked out when you're focused. And a lot of what Carey Price is doing is in your head, but you focus harder. You dig down deeper. It's when you start doing things outside the norm that's when you realize it's really affecting you.
Is it a classic case of overthinking?
It can be, but as a hockey player, you know, life is pretty regimented. One thing about being a hockey player in the NHL is, you know, we'll tell you where to be and when to be there. You don't have to think about a lot more than that. The bus is at 10. It'll be in the back of the hotel, unless you're Kevin Dineen, who would perennially wait in the front of the hotel. And we'd have to go get him. Tell him, Kevin, there was only a couple of things here. And we loved him for that.
I would think, and I think this pertains to almost every sport, if you are a pitcher in baseball and, you know, some great hitter is at the plate, you're probably going to try and be a lot finer than you would be. You're going to be really careful about throwing anything anywhere near the middle of the plate. You're going to try and paint the corners. If you're a hockey player and you're going up against Carey Price or some goaltender who's, you know, is red hot, isn't there a tendency to be a little finer? You know, you got to be almost perfect in order to beat them. I know, Stock, you may not have had much of this as an experience, but
yeah,
give me your general.
I can bring my five. I think you just got to change the thought process a little bit. Some nights the goalie's on it, and it's hard to beat him on that first one. But he's got to be great on the second one, too. Like, you know, a lot of times, you know, depending on where you're shooting, Carey's last night, his glove was on fire last night. Carey looked like his glove was great. So option B was, listen, we're having a hard time beating him. Drive the net. No matter where you throw it at his feet, there's going to be a rebound. Like, that's where you have to, like, that part of the game kind of comes in a little bit. It's you don't overthink. Unless the puck's on a Cole Caulfield stick or a Nick Suzuki, if there's someone coming down that wing, you don't see anything. You're not going to, like, throw it at his feet, make him give you that second option. And I think, you know, it's hard to beat some of these great goalies when they're on. You just got to find ways to make them, take them out of that comfort, bumping into them. Like, we do it to the superstars in the game, but there's ways to get those goalies off too. And that's kind of where, you know, the goal scorers have to keep doing what they're doing, but the goalie has to stay in that frame of mind as well. So how do you get that goalie out of his frame of mind was something that I did. Well, I let guys like Brian score a whole bunch of goals. Goal scoring was overrated. Not scoring was where it was at.
Oh, I see.
Or you could go run him over, PJ. Like,
right, exactly. But now he's thinking. That's what you got to create. You know, okay, if you can find a way to get the goalie off the pad, then it's kind of, you know, it's a game within the game within the game. Shooters trying to outthink, you know, if you can get the goalie to start thinking about something, you know, have that guy drive the net a little bit, stop it a little bit closer to him, taking away his time and space as you do as to a forward. But Carey was, there was nothing slowing down Carey. And Bo, even though he was all worldly and he has been in this series, he still gave up three last night.
The other active first round series, the Golden Knights and the Wild, is now going to a game seven, something I think the Leafs obviously would like to avoid. Are we at all surprised that this thing went seven? Vegas was up 3-1. I think, if I remember correctly, John, they lost the first game. Vegas lost the first game and then won three in a row.
That's right.
And now Minnesota has come back. Some people thought this would be pretty easy for Vegas. Others thought Minnesota was going to give them a battle. Who do you like in game seven, Lawton?
I thought Minnesota would definitely give them a battle because of the past history and how they match up against Vegas. I thought it was really fortuitous for the Wild that they were able to beat Vegas down the stretch and essentially guarantee that they could end up avoiding Colorado, which is not a great matchup for Minnesota, but getting Vegas, who tied Colorado in total points, but plays a completely different way. Minnesota has shown that they have the ability to lock it down with anybody. They've got 4D that have been playing together for what feels like 100 years. When you think about Suter, Brodin, Dumba, and Spurgeon, that's really powerful. They also do a good job of controlling the center of the ice, their D and their forwards combined, and that coupled with the fact that no Max Pacioretty, 14 goals for Vegas, and Tuck and Stone have seven of them. They're just not getting any secondary scoring from anybody else. And I thought that that was a possibility to happen. Marc-Andre Fleury's been incredible, but he did have one kind of off game. Other than that, this series is kind of what I thought. And I gave Minnesota about a 48 or 9% chance to win this series when I looked at it. Since and when I'm all into gambling now.
And when, if I would have told you that the dominant line of the series would be Eriksson Ek, Foligno, and Greenway, as it started, if you didn't follow the West a lot, yeah, I think a lot of people would have a raised eyebrows. But I'll tell you what, if I'm Dave Evanson, I'm putting them out every third shift, no matter what. I mean, use them all the time. They're the biggest line. They're the heaviest line. And I don't, Vegas can't match them, can they?
They have not been able to find an answer for him. That's exactly right. And fortunately for Minnesota, Joel Eriksson Ek took a horrible spill at the end of the last game, but he did return. If they lost him, that would sink their chances. Minnesota is a team that, you know, is incredibly weak down the middle. But what we found out about them is that they've been able to, number one, Joel Eriksson Ek is surprised. Number two, they've been able to put pairs of guys together, whether it was Kaprizov and Zuccarello, Fiala at times, just matching those guys. They've been able to carry lines that way all year. And it's been good enough. It's been really interesting to watch. The other thing that's been really dynamic for this team this year is a little bit of the changing of the guard. John, getting Zach Parise played and scored a huge goal last game, but really has been not even in the lineup for the majority of this series. That was a tough thing for them to overcome. And then Ryan Suter, who's still playing great, there's just not as much focus on him maybe leading the National Hockey League in minutes. It's a little bit more balanced and they're better off for it.
Yeah. PJ, one of the interesting things about Vegas is they made a conscious effort to change their style of play. A lot of it, I'm sure, had to do with the change in coaches. But a team that, I mean, I don't know how you describe that first year. It was magic, but they were more offensive, a lot more offensive than they are now. Now they have become a real button-down, tight, defensive hockey club by design, by mandate. And when you play that way, and Minnesota has played that way for years, really, you don't have a lot of wiggle room. I gather that game seven is going to come down to who gets the lucky bounce, who gets the fortunate goal. I mean, this might be a 1-0 hockey game.
Vegas is the better team, and they've made a lot of the right moves. I mean, they're, yes, Pacioretty missing some offense. They're not getting the depth or scoring, as we just mentioned. But the story about Vegas from the first year, comparing them to where they were to where they are, if you remember before they started, they had the crazy, I think it was a shooting, and just everything of that year almost seemed like the hockey gods kind of took over everything, and Carlson went on a crazy year. They weren't supposed to be as successful as they were, but everyone ended up cheering for them, and it was just if you weren't a fan, you were a fan, and you wanted them to do well, and it carried them. But they didn't have a winning formula, and I think they've added the right pieces over time, and I think everyone has been thinking that it's, you know, Vegas or Colorado in the Stanley Cup final coming out of the West, and that's been talked about since probably halfway through the season. And I'm not saying, as we talked about goal scoring and goalies getting into your head, I'm not saying that's the case right now, but they are a better team. I think they're, you know, yes, the Greenway line's been great, and I'm a big fan of, you know, when the play starts to get that way faster, more physical, that playoff style. But Vegas is also built that way as well. Get Petrangelo, they should be strong on the back end. Like you mentioned, Fleury, their goaltending's been good. It's they have the scorers, they're just not getting it right now. And I think, you know, what Billy Guerin's been able to do with Minnesota, as you mentioned, the Parise not playing as much, taking like, hey, we don't, his exact, when I spoke to them, they're just not exciting. They weren't exciting before. You know, it was bland. And now, you know, they're a fun team to watch, and they can play different styles. I just don't think, of course, everything we do is comparables, and they almost at every position, I think that that Vegas should win. Like, as we talked, start off Montreal, Toronto, besides the goaltending, I don't really know where, if you all lined it all out, where Minnesota really has that advantage. Some players are just playing a lot better than others right now. And I don't know if it's in the head because of everyone just said, Vegas, this is your, you know, you're going to be in the final.
It's interesting that, you know, for most part, every playoff series, we end up talking about goaltending. But in this series, there isn't very much talk about goaltending. It's all about the forwards. It's all Shea Theodore doesn't have a point yet in this series. Cam Talbot, who had a horrific game four, has had two spectacular games for Minnesota. The question for Cam is, can he sustain it in game seven? If he can, because he's already won 1-0 in Vegas in this series. if he can, I think this is a 50-50 deal today. Brian's got it. Brian said 49 before the season. I think this is a coin toss now between these two teams. And I would not be surprised to see Minnesota come out with the victory. It's not the glamorous story, but I'll tell you what, and Dean Evason, there's a ton of credit for what's happened there. The interesting part about that whole storyline was Zach Parise's role in this team, changed in Vegas during the regular season in a game that Evason kept him out of the lineup, and Parise was livid. He made it publicly known he was livid, but what happened that night was, everybody understood that the coach was in charge. And this is Dean Evason's teams now. This is not Zach Parise's team. This is not Ryan Suter's team. This is Dean Evason's team. And that changed the whole perspective for this club, and they played so much better the second half of the season.
Couldn't agree more, John. I think you hit the nail right on the head. The game that, you know, Zach had a long shift right at the end of the game, Vegas ended up scoring. That's when things really changed. But Dino handled it beautifully. He just said, look, I understand he's mad. I'd be disappointed if he wasn't mad. I expect all our players that aren't playing to be mad. He put Zach back into the fray with the rest of the group and removed him from a pedestal.
Right.
And accountability isn't always equal on a National Hockey League team. But he brought Zach back down to the rest of the group. And it meant a ton to that group to see it. So it hadn't been that way in a long time.
The year Washington went on to have a lot of success. Barry Trotz started the year off. I don't know if you guys remember, but taking Alex Ovechkin for showing up late to a meeting,
right,
and sat him out. And it's kind of one of those things that, you know, he's had the line to the ownership, the line to the, like, always overstepping the coach. He'd gone through, you know, half a dozen coaches in so many years, yet they're perennial winning the President's Trophy, but they can never get it done in the playoffs. They survived on talent, but when it came down to it, you know, well, what does Trotz do? Come in right away and say, hey, buddy, it's been this way for a little bit, but that way is not working. This is, you know, and kind of put him on the side. And I think sometimes you sacrifice that one guy to win over the other 19. And that was, seems to be the case in Minnesota.
Yeah. Two things you got to do as a coach, guys. Accountability is always number one. And the guys that are having success, they do that beautifully. The second thing is you got to convince these guys on a nightly basis that you can make them better, enhance their careers so they can make more money. If you do those two things, you could do really great things with a hockey team. And just look at the guys that are doing a fantastic job. A guy like Rod Brindamore, you know, he has a level of accountability. He's all about that. You know, he cares too. We saw that last night again, just in a little video after their game.
Wasn't that something?
How great was that? That was awesome. I love that guy. I was going to jump in, but that's it. Perfect, go ahead.
So for the listeners, what happened after the game, rather than a regular pep talk, Rod Brindamore FaceTimed his mom and dad with the team, and it was his father's birthday. And Brindamore said that this was a proud moment for his family, and his dad was proud of his team because he cheers for his team. And then the team sang happy birthday on FaceTime to his dad. And then Brindamore left the room, and that was it. That was the story. The viral video that went out last night was absolutely spectacular. Go on Twitter, go on the Carolina Hurricanes page and find it, because it will make you smile for an hour. It was so much fun to see.
Yeah. Go back and look at when they beat Toronto.
Oh, David Ayres.
David Ayres. And it's just the speech that Rod gave after the game was incredible. I played for gifted orators like Herb Brooks. These guys were great speakers. They could speak to a crowd of 10,000 or 20 hockey players and do it beautifully. That is not Rod Brindamore, but he is definitely authentic and real and connects with the players. And that plays really well. It's genuine. It should be well thought of. Rod, you know, he's pacing around the room in that video. You know, it's almost kind of odd. Yeah. But at the end of the day, you go, I'm going through the wall for that guy.
Yeah. Yep.
Whatever he wants, I'm going to do. And that's what you need to get out of your players.
As a player, but he didn't even cue them to sing happy birthday. They just started.
No, well. That's what I mean. That was part of the organic moment.
Yeah, so good.
We want to address a couple of series that are ready to commence in round two. We'll do that after the break. Back with more after these messages. It's Bob McCown. It's John Shannon with us, PJ Stock, Brian Lawton, as we address the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Bob's gonna do a pep talk for us two guys after the show. Make us feel good.
Give it to us, Bob.
I'd say it's a little late for that.
Have you ever given a coworker a pep talk? Be honest.
Bob?
Oh, quite the opposite.
Quite the opposite. No,
I worked with you before. I'm aware of the other side of it. But have you ever given?
It's like the hell out of them, but rarely a pep talk.
By the way, Brian, you talked about, we're going to go way on a tangent here, but you talked about her having Herb Brooks give you a pep talk. Herb Brooks worked for me for 4 years. And he loved giving pep talks. He hated getting them.
Oh, yeah. Always the case.
How many pep talks do you think Mike Keenan gave over the course of his coaching career?
Oh, my goodness gracious.
He may say, well, they were pep talks. It's just that nobody listening would have thought of them in that manner. Yeah. Islanders
called,
Bruins.
Those are called undressings, not pep talks.
Well, Islanders Bruins, you can make the argument that these are two teams that pulled off upsets in round one. Do you think? Were they both surprises? PJ, to you.
Oh, it's hard to ever bet against Sidney Crosby, Malkin, Letang, and the history that core has with the Pittsburgh Penguins, but they've been a struggling team for a bit. And, you know, I looked at two teams and how well they've done this year, and I had, besides Carolina going against Nashville, but I had a hard time picking Carolina and the Islanders in these playoffs to go how far, because they just play hockey so well, but they're not all that sexy. Like the Carolina has some miles more specialness to them. And of course we love the Brindamore factor, but I look at the Islanders and it's just, they're a good team, but I just don't, but man, they just play the game so well. And this is all done, we mentioned Trotz before. Trotz didn't in Nashville, couldn't win, goes to Washington. We talked about the Ovi thing, gets them to win, leaves right after the cup and goes to a team that had no one with the Islanders, and they're you know, considering they don't have the Ovechkins of the world, they're one of the best hockey teams out there. He could get so much juice out of that squeezed lemon, and he's doing it again. I just think the Bruins can play that same way. And I think the Bruins have those skill set players. They have the perfection line. They have the experience. And I like the Bruins because of that. I have my Bruins jersey right on top of me, so I'm not going to say anything differently. But the Islanders deserve so much credit for the way they played, how consistent they are in their game plan. And again, they're doing it with a lot of, you know, they're missing a lot of sexiness to that team. Barzell is beautiful, fun to watch, but they win just plain punching the face over and over and over and over and over again and frustrates you.
Matt Barzell had to learn the Trotz way.
Yeah.
Part of the success of that team is Matt Barzell is not the exception. He's part of the rule now. And that's what Trotz, by the way, Barry Trotz would still be in Washington, probably wanted to stay in Washington, but after they won the cup, the coach would not pay him any, the owner would not pay the coach any money, wouldn't pay him enough money to stay. And how many Stanley Cups has Washington won since Trotz left? The answer, you know, none.
They haven't won a round.
You know, yeah, I know
what it is. They haven't won a round. Neither has St. Louis, for that matter, who's won the Stanley Cup after them. And Pittsburgh hasn't won very many either since they won two cups. So, you know, the league is changing. There's no doubt about that. But what the Islanders did to me truly was remarkable. I mean, they should have lost.
Sure.
Certainly, I don't know, if it's game five. Just Pittsburgh just played great. And the Islanders just hang around. It's really impressive to watch. Nobody gets more out of their roster, in my opinion, than Barry Trotz does out of that New York. And I'm not saying they have a bad roster. I'm just saying that they are maximizing every player in their role on that team.
And they finally have some goaltending that can, I mean, he was very good the last two games when you think about how good, I mean, and they have, I mean, the great line about Barry Trotz, who's playing in goal? Well, the Russian goalie, because they're both Russian. But, and Varlamov had a much better regular season, but Sorokin has been spectacular.
And Pittsburgh didn't get that. Pittsburgh didn't get the great goalie. Wow. They got good goalie, but not great. And now the question that's happened year after year after year with that Pittsburgh organization, as you just mentioned, you know, they had the success they won a few years ago, but do they just keep going down this rabbit hole and the organization is going to have to restart over at its ugliness, or
no.
Does anyone see anything happening to this core?
71's got to go. Sorry. Malkin's got to be traded. You got to move him. Somehow find a way to move Malkin. It might be too late.
Affirmation. It might be too late, but they did get affirmation that they could win without him at this stage.
Sure.
Now, you know, and Jeff Carter was a complete revelation. The real question for me there is what happens with Mike Sullivan?
Right.
Well, let's kind of get off that bandwagon a little bit because they're done and we've got a whole off season to address what they do next. In listening to this conversation though, I gather none of you are going to take the Islanders over the Bruins in the next round. But you'll do it with a cautionary tale that anything can happen because you can't underestimate a Trotz team, and this Islander team is strangely efficient. But the Bruins appear to be, from every standpoint, the better team. Do they not?
They do. It was a beatdown what they did to Washington. I thought Washington would give them a better series than they did.
Oh, yeah, I did too.
I'm concerned for Washington long term. They're still pushing the envelope. You wonder, you know, if they need to make some more significant changes.
I tell you what, you got to give Don Sweeney some credit, Bob. I'm not a Taylor Hall fan. I never was. I'm not sure I ever will. But that trade acquisition, what he did there, Taylor Hall has proved a lot of us wrong and played very well in the short term.
Well, but it is very short term.
Well, but here's the thing. He played well enough to get this team to a point where I do think they're favored against the Islanders. Because they now have depth. They have more depth in the forward lines than they've had in a long, long time.
Based on this little sample here of a few games, are you going to give him an $8 to $10 million contract next year if you're a GM?
That's the point. You're right. I was listening to Machine Gun over there talk about it, but
that's me, Bob. That's me, by the way.
Yeah, what do you I agree, he's had some great moments, but he's playing with the right organization that makes you play a certain way. But what do you, it almost is like, you know, when Michael Komisarek played with Andrei Markov, when they, you know, you have these players that are put in a position to be successful because of the person they're playing with. How much better is he really? And what are you willing to pay him after this? He's nowhere near an $8 million player from what I'm watching. Does it help that he's playing? So I don't know what his next few years are going to look like, but back to your point, he's added depth to that top six, that top nine, and they just can put people in the right positions right now. And he does, you know, he frustrates you a little bit because he had that year in Jersey, but he is kind of that power forward player that he can change things in a shift, in a few strides. It's the so many times that he frustrates you that he doesn't do it, but it takes that one second or one step or one stride to make a difference.
Give David Krejci some credit. David Krejci's made Taylor Hall a better player.
Well, and that's I think that's the exact point. I'm intrigued by Brian and PJ's assessment of this. In my mind, there's two kinds of players in sports. There's the guy that makes the player next to him better, and there's the guy who is better based upon the players he's with. And I think they're far too often general managers don't get that assessment right. And that's why players are both either underpaid or overpaid. And it doesn't become apparent until you take that player and put him in a spot where either the guys around him aren't good enough, or the guys around him can't make him look like the better player that he appeared to be. So, and I put the aforementioned Mr. Hall in that category. Carolina, Tampa Bay. Not overly surprising that we get this matchup. Carolina had it tough. Nashville, you know, battled.
They both had it tough.
But Carolina was the better team over the course of the regular season. Some people thought maybe a dark horse, but they run into an experienced, efficient group in Tampa Bay. I don't think anybody could make Carolina the favorite in this lot, could they?
No, but it's closer than you think. I really think this is another one that's just a percentage or 2 point away. It's almost a 50-50 for me. And yet with Kucherov back, I think that's enough to tip it in Tampa's favor. Carolina's got something special going on. One of these years they're going to be Tampa. I don't think it's going to be this year, but I think it's going to be a hell of a series. And I won't be surprised if Carolina wins three games in that series and loses. Just to put it in perspective, I love what they've done. I love how they play. I love the way Tom Dundon runs that organization. I know you guys had him on your podcast. I heard he was tremendous.
Yeah, we did.
He is a very smart guy. He understands this business. He just does it
differently.
A unique way. We'll say that.
PJ, you agree?
Yeah, well, it's that power play. First of all, it goes back to, again, before, I don't want to keep going back, but I love Brindamore. We'd go through, like, I love that team. They just don't have the sexiness of somebody else. I think right now, Carolina, it's the goalies, but, you know, you look at the experience, they just want a cup. You look at Kucherov missing the entire, comes back, and what is leading the playoffs right now. The power play with all the pieces in place is the Globetrotters right now. It's every comparable is, again, what we do. You know, probably better goalie, top D in Hedman, and you look up front at the Kucherov. I love the team, which is Carolina. And yes, it's going to be close because they're such a great team. But man, I mean, Tampa in that first round. What happened to Tampa, I think Carolina has to play that way a little. It just got Philly. It got ugly and it got like punch you in the face hockey. It got, I think that kind of got carried away in a little bit of the Tampa Bay series. I don't know if Carolina can play that way and get them rattled a little bit. But the only thing Carolina can't do is take penalties because Tampa Bay, their power play was just so fun to watch. And so almost every position, I give the advantage to Tampa. But again, we talked about the singing the happy birthday song last night. I'm not counting out Brindamore. I'm not counting out Carolina Hurricanes. I can't. But Tampa Bay should win because of everything in every position.
All right, we got about 2 minutes. I want a couple of hypotheticals here. If Toronto beats Montreal, they will play Winnipeg. 2 weeks ago, you probably would have said, well, Toronto will be the definitive favorite. Winnipeg has dusted themselves off after a terrible stretch and were awesome against Edmonton. Would you still make Toronto the definitive favorite in this quickly, Lawton?
I would, absolutely. I think that Edmonton lacked depth, and that was the end of them, in my opinion. They just, I didn't think they had a huge chance if Winnipeg was healthy. Winnipeg did rise up. They were healthy. They did play better than I thought they would. Toronto will not have that issue against Winnipeg, and they will be able to exploit them, and they will be a very heavy favorite for me if Toronto moves on and plays there.
PJ, quick, Toronto or Winnipeg?
Listen, if Jack Campbell continues to be great, it's hard to really go against Toronto, but Winnipeg has an amazing goalie. They have probably top six, just as comparable as anybody else. And it's who's hotter for the next 2 weeks. I think that Winnipeg can play that physical style a little bit, maybe better in the playoffs than the Leafs. You know, Matthews and Marner haven't lit it up yet either.
Not at all.
So I'll take Lawton's percentage going into this, and it's going to be a 49.37 chance that the Leafs beat Winnipeg.
I think we all agree that Colorado should dominate Minnesota if they get there. If it's Vegas, Colorado, that could be a classic. Who do you like there, Stock?
Colorado. I love seeing their power play. I love how their top guys play with energy and passion. And Cale Makar walking the blue line is probably the funnest thing to watch in hockey right now. Just a fun, explosive team. And I think they can kind of play always. And I think we've seen question marks with those other two teams right now. So I'll give that to Colorado, but I'll let Lawton do the percentages.
Brian?
48.375921, I think is the right answer, PJ. No, I got Colorado all the way. Vegas is going to beat the heck out of them if they win. If it's Minnesota, it's not going to be that close. As good as Vegas is a good matchup for Minnesota, Colorado is a bad matchup for Minnesota, and we've seen that repeatedly. They just can't slow them down, and they're not as mean as Vegas can be when Ryan Reeves is in there and they're really playing heavy hockey.
Got to get them off the COVID list. Got to get them off the COVID list.
Yeah. I know there's some uniqueness going on out there right now that may be favorable for Minnesota. But at the end of the day, I would see Colorado and either Tampa or Boston in the final.
Boys, lots of hockey left. Enjoy the rest of the road. And if the creek don't rise, we'll call on you again before this thing is over. Thank you, guys. Good to see you.
Cheers, boys.
My pleasure.
Brian Lawton, PJ Stock. We'll come back to wrap it after these messages. And we're back. McCowan, Shannon, thanks to Stock and Lawton for joining us. Yesterday afternoon at 4 o'clock, there was a split doubleheader with the New York Yankees because of the rain out the previous day. And Alek Manoah, the young kid, came up and did not disappoint. Six innings, no runs, two hits, struck out seven. Was every bit as good as you would want him to be, and merely justified the position that I have been presenting for a long, long, long time.
All right. Okay. Okay.
You don't have to leave them there just because they don't have enough experience. If they're good enough, get their keisters to the major leagues.
Yeah. And I can only imagine, Bob, and because I'm acknowledging in this situation, you were correct. Okay. So let's leave it at that.
You're welcome.
But can you imagine doing that in Yankee Stadium? I mean, nope. I know it's not full, but to be able to do that at, you know, the most famous name in baseball, not the same stadium, but to do it at Yankee Stadium against the New York Yankees, if you were a baseball fan, if you were a kid, I mean, every player, every kid at 7 years old talked about doing it against the New York Yankees at Yankee Stadium.
Yeah.
And I tell you what, just to give some plaudits, Hazel May's interview with Manoah after the game, where he thanked his parents, his mother, who he said gave he and his brother food before she would eat. He broke down. It was a spectacular interview that really displayed the human aspect of sports and why we're all in this business. It was a tremendous interview.
Well, one game does not make a career. I'm the first to acknowledge that. And the fact that he did it at Yankee Stadium does not mean it's going to be easier when he goes to Minnesota or, you know, down to Tampa in front of probably fewer people than were at Yankee Stadium yesterday.
To be able to do it everywhere else is also a sign of sustainability, correct?
Well, we're going to find out. I mean, you could not get a much better start than what this kid provided. And he provides an arm in a rotation that desperately needs that arm. Mm-hmm. And he's fresh. He's bright-eyed. When you saw him in the dugout when the Blue Jays hit those back-to-back home runs, like a kid in a candy store. And if you're a sports fan, it's one of those moments you almost never forget.
No, I agree.
We must off. We thank you all for watching or listening, as the case may be. We'll come back on Monday. Have yourselves a swell and safe weekend. For John Shannon, Bob McCowan, see you later.